Even as a new poll finds that Pennsylvanians think gas drilling's economic benefits outweigh environmental concerns, new worries about water contamination are cropping up. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Jennifer Shveta Jordan. Today we visit Bradford County, where a woman is blaming barium poisoning on a gas driller. And in this not-so-sunny region, a so-called solar city is emerging. Plus, our high school intern talks about how caring for a little section of a park opened her eyes to the natural world. That and more is coming your way on the Allegheny Front. In a raucous meeting over shale drilling, U.S. Department of Energy reps came to Washington County, Pennsylvania, to hear from citizens. The DOE is reviewing hydraulic fracturing safety. The Allegheny Front's Kate Malangowski has more on this and other shale news.
Hundreds of people jammed an auditorium at Washington and Jefferson College to address the Secretary of Energy's Natural Gas Subcommittee. The subcommittee's panel has been criticized for having conflicts of interest within the gas industry. Some people who oppose drilling carried signs reading, "The DOE is full of gas." One speaker referred to members of the subcommittee as patriotic heroes. Pittsburgh City Councilman Doug Shields was among dozens of speakers. Shields referred to the drilling moratorium that passed in Pittsburgh last fall and said the Natural Gas Subcommittee should be doing more thorough research about Marcellus shale drilling.
We assembled panels of lawyers, we assembled panels of scientists, and took the evidence for what it was. And we come down to this. As an elected official, why in the God's green earth would I want to be against jobs and money and a better economy? Because the health and welfare of the people that I serve come first.
Gas and energy company reps also spoke. Bob Garland, a senior technical advisor with Universal Well Services, said fractured wells have been regulated by the Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Department of Energy, among others.
And for the past 62 years, we've been using the process of hydraulic fracturing, and as the person stated before, there has not been any one documented case of groundwater contamination or hydraulic fracturing.
According to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, one lobbying firm, Energy in Depth, provided some pro-drilling landowners free transportation, lodging, and food to speak at the public meeting. Also, a Pennsylvania Senate bill was just introduced to charge an operational fee for Marcellus wells. An amendment to the bill imposes an annual fee for the first 10 years, beginning at $40,000 and dropping to $10,000 by the fourth year of operation. Bill sponsors estimate this kind of tax would bring in about $70 million this year and nearly $760 million over the next 5 years. Pennsylvania is currently the largest gas-producing state in the country that doesn't tax drilling. And in a recent Quinnipiac poll, Pennsylvania voters say 63-30% that economic benefits of natural gas drilling in the Marcellus Shale outweigh the environmental impacts. Support is strong among men, women, among all political parties, and in all regions in the state. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Kate Malangowski.
The Allegheny Front is partnering with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette's Pipeline website in covering Marcellus Shale issues. More details on these and other stories can be found daily on Pipeline.
Critics blame hydraulic fracturing fluid being used in the natural gas drilling industry for contaminating water supplies. But in a new case in Bradford County, Pennsylvania, a woman who lives near a wellhead says she's gotten sick even before the well was fracked. WHYY's Susan Phillips reports for the Allegheny Front on this new claim of barium poisoning.
Crystal Stroud is a 29-year-old hairdresser who lives on a rural road by a stream across from a farm. In February, a company called Chief Oil and Gas began drilling a natural gas well about 1,200 feet from her house. In March, she says she started noticing clumps of hair falling out in the shower. Then, a week later,
you know, I said to my husband, "Oh my God, there's something wrong." And, you know, he put his hand on my chest. You know, I can feel it. It's beating really hard. I said, "I feel like I'm out of breath constantly when I grocery shopping. I felt like I would have to stop and breathe in, breathe out, and really slow my heart down and take deep breaths." Everybody said it sounds like anxiety attacks.
Stroud's doctor prescribed Zoloft, an anti-anxiety medication.
So after taking the Zoloft for 3 days, I still had all of the symptoms, the shortness of breath and the heart racing, and then my hands began to tremble.
Then, Stroud says, her speech became slurred. Like many in her area, Stroud was aware of the concerns about fracking. when she saw the drill rig go up near her house, she had her well water sent for testing. She wanted to get a baseline in case fracking ended up polluting her water. On April 11th, she got a surprising call from the lab.
I said, well, what do you mean major concerns? They said, well, you have elevated levels of barium, manganese, lead, gross alpha, gross beta, which are radiological materials. I said, well, what do you mean? I said, I've been, you know, extremely sick for the past 3-4 weeks and they don't know what's wrong with me. You know, I told her my symptoms and she said, well, barium has been known to cause these symptoms.
It is a public health concern. I mean, she needed to know that her barium in her water was really, really high.
That's Carrie Davis, who works for Benchmark Analytics, the lab that Stroud used to test her water.
She is almost 2.5 times the maximum contaminant level. And that we really don't see that often.
Barium is a heavy metal that can occur naturally. It's also used in drilling for oil and gas. It can be poisonous if consumed in large amounts. It can cause heart problems, as well as numbness around the face, muscle weakness, diarrhea, and an upset stomach. Davis says Stroud's water also had elevated levels of methane, chloride, and lead. After hearing from the lab, Stroud and her 4-year-old son got blood tests. Both came back showing high levels of barium. Down the road from Stroud, Mia Root lives with her husband and 2 daughters.
Actually, I got the results here.
Her tests by a different lab showed even higher levels of barium, 10 times the recommended level. But Root and her family do not drink their water and say they have no symptoms.
But I did use it for cooking and stuff of that nature. Whenever I'd boil it, I'd still use it. But this guy told me flat out, he said, not to use it. He said, I'm surprised no one's had a heart attack.
And although the mud used in gas drilling can contain barium, a spokeswoman from Chief Oil and Gas says no barium was used to drill the well near Stroud and Root. She would not be interviewed on tape, but says Chief uses a synthetic mud that is environmentally friendly. Also, Chief uses a closed-loop system, which means that all the cuttings and fluid from the drilling process go directly into a steel container and not into an open-air drill pit. Spokeswoman Christy Gittens says their investigation reveals their natural gas well could not have caused the contamination of Stroud's drinking water. So where did the barium come from? Barium can occur naturally, but it's usually buried deep within the earth. Even before a well is fracked, some speculate the drilling process might itself lead to drinking water contamination. Carl Markiewicz is a toxicologist with the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, which is part of the Centers for Disease Control.
Whatever's in the natural geologic formation can be released. And we don't have empirical data, you know, showing this, but understanding the chemistry involved, it certainly is possible.
Markiewicz says connecting toxins in the blood with water contamination is difficult. Most people don't test their water before drilling. And even then, proving a connection would not be easy.
You know, when I say that our science has not evolved with this industry, it really hasn't. And things like that could be coming through in the groundwater. And, you know, barium is one that's associated with drilling. We know that. But boron and selenium and arsenic and other things are as well.
Markiewicz says these contaminants have shown up near drilling sites in Texas, Oklahoma, and Colorado. So it doesn't surprise him to see them now in Pennsylvania water wells. In fact, a group of residents in Sugar Run, Pennsylvania, not far from where the Strouds live, reported similar symptoms before the well was fracked. Their blood and water tests also showed high levels of barium. One person who is not surprised by this is Dr. Theo Colborne. Colborne is the president of the Endocrine Disruption Exchange, which tracks how chemicals in the environment affect people's health. She says many people start exhibiting symptoms before a well is fracked, and she agrees that tracing a source of contamination can be mysterious.
So even underground, no 2 locations are going to be identical. But of course, if the people were higher up, their probability of maybe having this reach their water was far less than her being farther. If she's down in a draw, of course she's going to be more exposed.
The CDC's Markiewicz says the case of Crystal Stroud's water and her elevated barium levels could be a harbinger of more to come as natural gas production expands across Pennsylvania.
I don't think we as public health officials have a good handle on what's going on at 5,000-6,000 feet below the ground and how that's impacting a well that may be at 100 or 200 or 600 feet.
Back in Bradford County, a 1,000-gallon jug filled with trucked-in water sits on Crystal Stroud's front lawn next to a swing set. Such containers, known as water buffaloes, dot Bradford County, a sign to every passerby that another well has been contaminated. Stroud says after she stopped drinking her well water, her symptoms have subsided. But she worries about long-term effects and the health of her son. Stroud says she feels her home has been stolen from her, and she wants it back.
That's it. I know a few people have asked me that, and they've said, but, well, you obviously can't have that now, so what do you want now? And I'm like, that's what I want. You know, I want our home back.
Stroud says she contacted real estate agents about selling her house, but once they hear about her contaminated well, they stop returning phone calls. Houses without water are worthless. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Susan Phillips.
Winged, web-footed, or woolly, wildlife in Pennsylvania is all around us. But the species living here are shifting. And so is the conversation about how to preserve and protect them. This week on the Allegheny Front Rewind, Kara Holsabel looks at those changes.
A few years ago, I came across a young duck that was stranded on some rocks near the Carnegie Science Center. The duckling was only a wad of fluff and no larger than a tennis ball. Its low peeping first caught my attention. There were no other ducks in sight, and this tiny thing could never survive on its own.
That was naturalist Chuck Teague, recorded for the Allegheny Front 10 years ago. He and many others over the years have proven that you don't have to go far, even in the city of Pittsburgh, to interact with wildlife. But our attention to cute balls of fluff and larger, visually appealing animals, or to put it in conservation lingo, charismatic megafauna, got the goat of another Allegheny Front guest in 1995. Charles Beer of the Western Pennsylvania Conservancy was on the show to talk about the comeback of peregrine falcons, but he suggested we should also be talking about less sexy animals.
These are the things that are usually smaller. They don't have the big brown eyes. They're not furry and feathery. Many of them are green, small plants, mosses, fungi, and also the whole realm of organisms that we loosely refer to as invertebrates, but really they're insects and they're mollusks and many of the small animals that are out there on the landscape and really driving ecosystems. We're not paying much attention to these right now.
According to Greg Czarnecki, executive director of the Pennsylvania Wild Resource Conservation Program, that's exactly what they're paying attention to now. Not the individual species themselves, adorable or otherwise, but the ecosystem as a whole. Why? Two words that don't give anyone a warm, fuzzy feeling. Climate change. Czarnecki says it's no longer enough to preserve and restore land so that species thrive. He says the landscape is evolving differently, and so are the animals. And it's just starting to be noticed in Pennsylvania.
Bob Curry, a professor at Villanova, is documenting encroachment of a southern species in Pennsylvania, the Carolina chickadee, which is moving to the north and is beginning to displace and hybridize with the black-capped chickadee, which is a native species here.
Those Carolina chickadees are moving their way north more than a half a mile a year, and our warmer temperatures are making them feel right at home. Czarnecki says Pennsylvania will be working with neighboring states more than ever, monitoring these changes and ferreting out their implications for the ecosystem and for us. He says education will also be important, but for a population that's pretty disconnected from their environment, that could be a bit of a bear. Climate change isn't well understood, and it doesn't necessarily leave its paw print on our imaginations like animals do.
As we look at climate change, we need to focus more on ecosystems rather than species. I think that's going to be even more of a challenge because it's harder for people to identify with ecosystems.
He says climate change may have to get more dramatic before residents notice, and that may make it more difficult to fund studies for Pennsylvania's non-game animals and their habitats. That's because the Wildlife Conservation Program relies heavily on public donations and the sale of state wildlife conservation license plates, the ones with the cute river otter on them. Charismatic megafauna, anyone? For the Allegheny Front Rewind, I'm Kara Holsapple.
The Allegheny Front Rewind is supported by the Richard King Mellon Foundation.
When Pittsburghers look up toward the sky, chances are they'll see clouds. It's not a place with a reputation for using solar energy. However, the city has been venturing into the possibility of powering buildings with sun. The Allegheny Front's Ashley Murray found one project in an unlikely place.
At Firehouse Truck 34 in the Woods Run neighborhood of Pittsburgh, someone is always on duty.
Sounds like somebody's cooking in here.
I think they got their slow cooker on. They know they're going to be there all day.
That's Jim Sloss talking to Dave O'Leary, one of the captains of the fire crew. Sloss is the city's energy and utilities manager.
So these are the firemen's bunk rooms. There are four rooms. They just have a single bed. And so they have different crews, a daylight crew, a nighttime crew.
Which means someone will need to take a shower, cook a meal, wash the dishes, just like you would do at home.
So basically our hot water is being heated through our solar thermal panels. And it heats up pretty quick.
Firehouse Truck 34 is one of two firehouses in the city that uses solar thermal systems. Sloss said that there will be four more systems by the end of summer. And a photovoltaic or PV installation, which is a system that converts solar to electricity, sits atop a building where city plumbers, carpenters, and electricians work. So, why solar? In 2007, the Department of Energy named Pittsburgh a Solar America city and invested about $450,000 for siting, installation, and training. The state also chipped in for purchasing equipment, as did the city's Green Trust Fund. There are now 25 Solar America cities, from other cloudy cities like Seattle and Portland, to places like San Antonio and Orlando. Hannah Moeller, Solar America Communities Program Director at the DOE, said the point of the project was not to choose only typical solar energy hotspots.
We wanted that geographic diversity, but we also wanted diversity in the maturity of the solar market. So, you know, cities like San Francisco have been working on solar initiatives for decades, whereas cities like Pittsburgh, honestly, were pretty much starting from scratch.
Moeller also said that much of the goal for the Solar America Cities grant is to standardize the process of solar installation.
A lot of what the Solar America Cities have worked on have been issues that, you know, frankly, aren't very sexy, right? I mean, there are things like streamlining the permitting process.
However, Sloss said that the permitting process has been smooth sailing for the city. It's more of a regional problem, explains Evan Endress, project coordinator for the Pittsburgh office of Penn Future.
As far as solar goes in western Pennsylvania, we're a little bit behind the rest of the state, especially compared to eastern PA, and there's many reasons for that.
Some of those reasons are access to already established solar markets in Philadelphia, Maryland, and Delaware, and better electricity rates, allowing for more attractive paybacks.
Where we need help from both the city and the county is actually with the municipalities in their zoning and other ordinances. That's where they could help the situation the best, because we have a situation in this region where permitting fees and unnecessary inspections are actually a hindrance to some installations.
Since permitting and inspections aren't the issue, the question is whether solar will be a money saver for the city. With the Marcellus drilling industry booming, natural gas prices have dipped. But Sloss says the installation saved the city $1,200 last year.
That's a pretty fair savings. We're looking at less than 10 years payback for the solar itself, with the life of the solar panels at about 20 years. The reason why it's so long right now is because the price of natural gas has dropped. If that price increases over the next couple years, that payback period will be less.
As for the PV system supplying electricity to the city's general services building, Sloss said the savings haven't been evaluated yet. And soon, the city will be facing what to do once the Solar America Cities grant is up.
One idea is taking the savings from these facilities and rolling that into a trust fund. And every time we hit a certain dollar amount, we do another installation.
As for the DOE, They're beginning a new grant that would include entire regions rather than just cities, in an effort to better standardize the solar installation process.
We're looking for large metro areas, so any major city or a coalition of local governments or even a whole state could apply. We hope that Pittsburgh will put together a strong team and participate in that challenge.
But for now, the city's fire stations will continue to use their solar energy. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Ashley Murray.
Outdoors and get moving. If you want to get your feet wet by trying kayaking or practicing outdoor yoga, the Allegheny Front and WYEP-FM are partnering to give Pittsburghers that chance this Saturday. The second Green Gathering event of this year takes place June 18th. Alexa Belajack is WYEP's Director of Education and Community Engagement, and she's coordinating the event. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Alexa, maybe you can just say what the Green Gatherings program is all about.
Well, it's really an opportunity for local green organizations to come together and meet with our WYP listeners. And it's a chance for our listeners to get to do some fun green things here in the city. We've really tried to make unique partnerships over this four event series.
And this particular event is focused on health. Now, last year, the Allegheny Front did a whole series of stories about children and nature and the evidence that playing outside benefits kids not just physically, but mentally, socially, when they're exercising outdoors. Is this an activity for the whole family?
Absolutely. In talking with Kayak Pittsburgh, they really encourage families to get out together on the rivers. And yoga, obviously, is something that's good for people of all ages.
So Father's Day.
Yes. It's a great opportunity.
And you said you're expecting nice weather.
I checked the weather just today, and it's supposed to be in the 70s, I think, and sunny.
What time is the event?
The event starts at 2 p.m., and we're meeting down at North Shore Riverfront Park at the kayak docks.
And can people do both of these events that day, or they have to choose one or another?
No, you get the opportunity to do both.
And I understand people might not have tried these things because of cost, but you've designed this event to be affordable.
Yeah, so basically you get to do both things for less than the price of doing either one of them individually.
And the prices range from $12 for members to upward to
$15 for non.
And how do people sign up?
You just go on WYEP.org on the homepage. The rotator will show an image of Green Gatherings. Click on there, and it's the first event listed.
Can you talk a little bit about Kayak Pittsburgh and BYS Yoga, the two organizations that you're working with?
Kayak Pittsburgh is actually a part of Venture Outdoors, and obviously they specialize in kayaking. So they have docks down on the Allegheny River, and you can just go and kayak whenever you'd like.
Yeah, I know they were closed a few weeks back during Memorial Day because the rain and the rivers were just out of control. But now they're open, I believe, until dusk.
Yeah, every day. Yeah, they make a real effort to get you out any time of the day. BAYS Yoga is a local yoga studio right here on the south side. And they do all kinds of classes and partner with about 20, 30 teachers. So they're actually bringing along someone who specializes in family, children's yoga.
Oh, great. And they do a lot of outdoor yoga through the summer season in a lot of different locations.
Yeah, they do. They're pretty neat studio, I would say.
I've been speaking with Alexa Belajack, WYEP's Director of Education and Community Engagement. She's coordinating Green Gatherings this year. WYEP and the Allegheny Front are partners in this event series. The upcoming event we've been speaking about is an outdoor recreation opportunity this Saturday, June 18th. You can find out more information about this event both at AlleghenyFront.org and WYEP.org. You're listening to the Allegheny Front. adults have been trained to adopt sections of public parks around Pittsburgh to pull out invasive plants and otherwise maintain and foster growth. More recently, high school students are getting in on the act. They're taking part in a similar program run by a coalition of conservancies and parks. Allegheny Front intern and City Charter High School junior Aisha Hughes serves as a crew leader for her high school's Urban Eco Stewards. And she has these reflections on the experience.
When I initially joined Urban Eco Stewards, it was just to get out of class. It wasn't until our first visit to our site, the Panther Hollow Watershed, that my feelings really began to change. Our first crew outing was in February, shortly after Pittsburgh's Snowmageddon storm. So as you can imagine, the weather was pretty bad. But we still decided to take our monthly trip. While there, we girdled invasive Norway maples on the snowy hills surrounding the Panther Hollow Lake. Girdling, or ring barking, is when strips of bark are removed from trees using small gun-shaped tools with edges that shave away or girdle the bark. We did this to kill off the invasive Norway maples and to make room for native plants. I really like girdling with the Eco Stewards, but even this didn't make me see the importance of helping the environment. What really helped me was just taking out time to actually look at all the things the park had to offer. One of the things Eco Stewards do in just about every trip is journaling. Crew members scatter around their site to write not only about the day's activities, but also to reflect on their personal feelings of simply being in the park. Taking this time to really stop and take in the beauty of the park helped to change my perspective about environmental sustainability. I had been to the park a lot of times when I was younger, but like most kids my age, I would rather be indoors spending time on the computer, at the mall, reading, sleeping, or watching TV. Looking back now, this is why many of my fellow crew members and I just couldn't get the importance of helping to improve the environment. In our cultural literacy class, we are learning about the famous Taoist philosopher Lao Tzu. One of Lao Tzu's most famous quotes is, "A well frog cannot conceive of the ocean." This basically means that a frog that spends all of its life in a hole could never truly grasp the concept of an ocean that it has never seen. In many ways, we eco-stewards were kind of like the whale frogs from Lao Tzu's quote. Many of us hadn't been to the park or any green areas around the city for years, so the importance of keeping them around for future generations wasn't important to us. It wasn't until we actually experienced and saw the beauty of the park with our own eyes that we were able to understand its significance. I was able to realize that green spaces, which aren't that common in urban areas, are very important to sustain. Being an eco-steward gives me the chance to give back to my community and help sustain the city's green areas for future generations, which is why I enjoy doing it so much.
Aisha Hughes is an intern with the Allegheny Front and a junior at City Charter High School. Whether you're young or old, we'd like to hear from you. We hope you'll like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And please check out our website, AlleghenyFront.org. While you're there, you can sign up for our weekly email with our latest stories. And you can write us at info@AlleghenyFront.org or 67 Bedford Square, Pittsburgh, 15203. The Allegheny Front is produced at Pittsburgh's 91.3 FM, WYTP. Joey Spihar is our production director. Kathy Nauer is the executive producer. I'm Jennifer Shveta-Jordan. Join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
The Allegheny Front is supported by the Heinz Endowments, the Laurel Foundation, and the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports coverage of water management and Marcellus Shale issues.